Lastly, today I'll be presenting some work that we did at Texas State University as well. I'm now a PhD student at Texas A&M though. So I have the pleasure today of talking to you about something that I hold very near and dear to my heart, and that's composting, which you all just learned a bunch about. Specifically, I'm super interested in composting materials that most people find to be a nuisance or problematic and turning them into something that we can use. In this case, we're going to be talking about brown algae, which you can see in the bottom right corner. Here they are trying to clean it up on the coast. So from some rationale for using brown algae as our compost material was that as of 2011, it's now a global invasive species. So it's a problem along the shorelines of much of the world. And in Texas, it's a major management issue along for our Gulf Coast communities. So we wanted to use it as a compost material, but we weren't sure if we're going to be able to actually produce a viable compost that we can use in the field. So first we collected some compost. It was fresh, so it had just washed up on shore within 24 hours. And we composted it and we ran some quality standard tests on it. So we shipped it off to a lab and they measured it according to the United States Compost Council requirements. So they have like a seal of approval that they put on the compost. And they measure these variables here. And when we got the results back, we found that all of the quality standards were met. So moving forward, we could use it as a compost material and successfully market it to the public. So our objectives with this study was now that we know that we can produce a good compost was how to market it to the people. So we wanted to measure their environmental behaviors and see if they wanted to use the compost and if they were going to purchase it. So we ran a willingness to pay survey, and we measured such things as environmental attitudes, local food use, compost behavior, and ethnocentricity, which is the willingness to buy American products. And also we measured demographic variables too to see if there was something going on there. So our sample had 257 respondents. We surveyed at garden centers, farmers markets, the university, community centers, and churches. The instrument was a 53-question survey. It was modeled after existing instruments that were found to be reliable. One actually dealt with using another specialty blend compost and others in other fields of study. So the first quantitative section, that we ran was environmental attitude. And this was developed by Cornelson in 2008, and it basically gauges the attitudes toward environment. Actually, Megan talked about it earlier. So again, it was rated on a 5-point Likert scale. There was 9 statements, from strongly disagree to strongly agree was the answers. Some of the examples that were given in the survey was, it is important that each individual be aware of environmental concerns, all the way to all plants and animals play an important role in the environment. So we scored it where 5 points was the most positive answer, was out of 45 points, and it received a good reliability value. Second, we measure ethnocentricity. So this is basically on whether people want to buy American-made products versus foreign-made products. Some examples of that was, it is not right to purchase foreign products because it puts Americans out of jobs, or only those products that are not available in the United States should be imported. So we scored it again, and we received a very high reliability score on it as well. Next was a locality section, which basically just dealt with local food use. So we asked such questions as, how often have you bought local fruits and vegetables? Or how often have you bought local dairy products? And again, the reliability value was in acceptable ranges. Next, we dealt with compost behavior. So this is something that we kind of developed on our own. This one had a 4-point Likert scale and went from does not apply to me, I don't know, to no and yes. And some of these questions were, I intend to use eco-friendly compost in my garden, or when I've used compost in the past, it's worked well for me. Next was the willingness to play. This was divided into two sections. So if you look at the example, the first example was what would be the base price you'd be willing to pay for one cubic foot based on the sample you see in front of you. So the answers were either $0, $3 or less, $4, $5, $6, or $7 or more. And then secondly, we asked them, assuming bags of compost are priced at $3 per cubic foot at your local nursery, how much would you be willing to, more would you be willing to pay for this specialty blend? And so the answers were either none, $1, $2, $3, or $4 or more. And so again, we scored it on 5 being the most positive answer, and this one received a very high reliability value as well. How we administered the survey was we had the actual finished product in half-gallon buckets. And the survey took about 15 minutes to complete, and we gave the survey respondents the packets of seeds as incentive. And it was all administered by one graduate student. So we sorted and scored the data in Excel, and then we ran frequency and descriptive statistics as well as correlations and ANOVA and SPSS. So our results for our demographics was pretty typical. It actually reflects, as this slide says, previous farmer market studies. Our ages were from 25 to 34 and 50 to 64. Our income range was all the way from $15,000 to $75,000, and it seemed most people had more than a high school diploma education, so either a bachelor's degree, a graduate degree, or at least some college. And the male to female ratio was pretty even. So beginning with the results with our first quantitative section, environmental attitude, the majority of the people scored, well, what we did here, let me stop for a minute, we divided them into three groups. So either having a positive attitude, a mediocre attitude, or a low environmental attitude, and then rated them on that. So the majority of the respondents ranked in the positive environmental attitude, over 75%. And then the rest actually rated in the mediocre environmental attitude, with no people rating in the low environmental attitude section. So next with ethnocentricity, most people were either positive or mediocre in this. It was pretty even split with only 7% rating as a low and ethnocentric attitude. With locality, it was pretty much almost the same as the ethnocentricity category, with most people being evenly split between positive and mediocre, with a very low portion being the negative locality attitude. So with compost behavior, we got some kind of interesting results here. Most people we actually found had a very low score rating and experience in the compost behavior category, with about 20% of them having a moderately experienced compost behavior. And we have a few explanations for this, which I'll talk about. With willingness to pay, it seemed like most people were in the mediocre category for willingness to pay, which meant that they were willing to pay about $6 to $4 per cubic foot of compost, which was pretty good, because if you go to Lowe's, you can get a 2-foot cubic foot bag of compost for about $3, versus if you go to your more upscale garden nurseries, you can get specialty blends of compost for about $5 to $6 per cubic foot. So this falls right in within that range. And most people were willing to pay about $5 per cubic foot, so it was a pretty good result. With correlations, we found a positive correlation with all of our quantitative sections: locality, compost behavior, environmental attitudes, and ethnocentricity, with the highest correlation being between the environmental attitude score and the willingness to pay. But all the other ones showed a positive correlation as well. So therefore, when people are marketing compost, they should market compost to people with the rate high scores in these categories. Also, when we asked the question, if you'd be willing to pay more than $3 per bag of compost, these are some of the answers we asked. Why would they be willing to pay more than $3? And more than anything, more people were interested in paying more because it was a locally or Texas-produced compost. And then next, the functionality of the compost was most important, with protecting against drought stress, followed by diverting materials from landfills, and it's a naturally based product. So those people wanting to market this compost to the consumers, it would be beneficial for them to use these sort of statements. When we ran an ANOVA on the demographics, we actually found no significant statistically between any of the demographics. So demographics didn't play a factor in our particular study. And in conclusion, we found that the brown algae can be used as an ingredient for compost, that we can garner a price between $4 and $6 per cubic foot for the compost, and that people marketing this compost should use statements such as locally produced, or protects against drought, or diverts materials from the landfill as a part of their marketing. And also that those quantitative sections such as locality, ethnocentricity, and environmental attitude all play a positive role in people's willingness to pay for the seaweed-based compost. And also that the demographic groups there was no statistical difference in the demographic groups. Is there any questions? Dr. Arnold?
I'm just curious, I know it wasn't in the study, but did you run into any salinity issues?
Right, yeah, you came in a little late. That was one of the problems when we were thinking about using it as a feedstock, and we thought that we would have salinity issues, but we sent it off to the lab that does the United States Compost Council quality standards, and it was all within acceptable ranges. But that was something that we were concerned about with using it as a feedstock. Right. Right. And anybody that's been to the coast in Texas for recreation purposes knows that the brown algae is quite a problem. It smells, it prevents access to the beach. So it's a win-win situation the way I see it. Yes, sir.
Did you test, was the compost tested for growth regulator?
Oh, so you're talking about like excess growth regulators? Okay, I don't think that is part of the variables that were measured, and that might be something in the future to measure. But I know that we did test for such things as like heavy metals and things like that, because that was a concern as well with it coming out of the ocean. But I have not looked into the growth regulators. Yes, actually it is. I was doing a little bit of work at the University of Hawaii, and they have an invasive seaweed problem there, and what they do is they kind of pulverize it and then just directly apply it as a mulch. I think it preserves a lot of the potassium that way. So, yes, sir?
Yeah, I came in late. I guess I got confused. Was it 2:30 instead of...
Oh, yeah, one of our presenters dropped out.
So you might have covered this, since you're the last one of the session. Did you find carbon to nitrogen ratio on that?
Yeah, it was all within a great C-to-N ratio. I don't have the particulars on the C-to-N ratio, but as far as the compost council's seal of approval, it has to fall within, I think it's 30 to 1, at least around that range for C-to-N.
Well, I mean, that's why I was real curious, because as a brown, obviously a brown algae, a lot of the question is in it, because I've seen reports that the actual nitrogen is somewhere around 0.5% or less.
Right, and that wasn't the only feedstock we used. We actually used cafeteria food waste as another component of this compost.
You didn't do any straight runs on just the sargassum?
Not to my knowledge, Dr. Okay. Cade.